This one goes on the outside of the Quonset hut, just to the left of the door. It should blow a hole through the corrugated wall and ignite the pile of fuel barrels on the inside. That'll start a chain reaction among the stores of ammo, finishing the job the boilers begin. Actually, this charge will ignite first, so nobody can try and escape through the gateway.
If they haven't already.
Yeah, true enough.
No danger of that.
Christy stretched her arm out the hole in the rock pile. She crawled partially out of the opening, then came back with an expression of success. In her hands was what appeared to be a retinal scanner.
Looks like they took that gateway apart.
To stop us from trying to gain entry again. Only do that if they were never coming back here again.
Maybe be gone already.
Just then, a rain of rubbish crashed into the quarry, starting a small landslide of ruined technology.
Still here.
Jack tied a strip of cloth around the 6-inch shiny steel barrel of his .357 Colt Python. While the others finished their preparations, Mildred placed the medkit inside the crushed wag. She hated to leave it behind, but it was much too heavy for her to carry along with the assorted weapons and explosives. Besides, the companions would be coming back this way. Nice to know it was here to patch any wounds in case they caught some lead blowing the bill to hell.
Any chance the blast will cause a cave-in down here?
Ryan stopped adjusting his bandolier of loaded rotary clips for the Stire.
No way. The ceiling is supported by the same metal as the nuke-proof door of the redoubts. Same stuff that forms the outside armor of the redoubts themselves. These tunnels will hold.
Cavan?
Jack gazed down the long, dark tunnel.
That could be trouble. But we'll have plenty of time to get past the cavern before the charges blow. I set them for 30 minutes.
More than enough.
Ryan went to the hole and glanced outside. The shadows from the high walls of the quarry made it difficult to determine if true night had fallen yet. Drawing the Sig Sauer, the one-eyed man settled down on a rock and patiently waited until the darkness was near absolute, softened only by the cold moonlight.
Good enough. Let's go.
Crawling over the smashed rocks, the companions exited the tunnel and moved silently through the jumbled remains of the quarry. Bits and pieces of crumpled machinery jutted from the piles of stones, along with an occasional human arm or leg, most of them still wearing the chains of their servitude. Watching the cliffs above for any sign of movement, the companions proceeded a few yards and paused, repeating the process until reaching a sloped road. They followed it to the top of the quarry and saw the wall of the vill rising before them. There didn't seem to be any sec man walking patrol along the top of the wall, and only a single searchlight swept over the vill. Then the revolving beam washed briefly across the dish, rising majestically into the sky. At that close range, the pre-dark antenna looked impossibly huge. Directly ahead of them was a gate set in the limestone wall, banded metal of some kind with hidden hinges, with no lock or handle. They instinctively knew it would take explosives to get through that portal. Thankfully, they had another way inside the shallow base. That was if Ryan and JB remembered the layout of the vill correctly. If not, the mission was a bust from the start. The backup plan was to simply shoot the dish with the law rockets from outside the wall, then run for cover and hopefully get back inside the underground tunnels before SecMen arrived in an APC and shot them to pieces. The plan bordered on suicide, and they all knew it, but the destruction would stop the Blues, at least for a little while. Raising a hand to signal for a pause, Ryan pulled the lone Haflo rocket launcher from his backpack and placed it on the ground next to a whipping post for slaves. He laid a strip of dark cloth on top, then sprinkled some dirt over both. In the darkness, the lump was nearly invisible from only a yard away. Ryan gestured at the hidden weapon with a stiff finger, then slashed a hand sideways across his throat. The masked companions nodded in understanding. The launcher was for life-and-death emergencies only. Ryan gave a thumbs up and gestured to the western side of the quarry, slightly away from the imposing wall. Following the edge of the cliff, the companions spotted dark shapes in the wan moonlight and felt a line of broken wags. Sheffield and his people were still here. Jack and Ryan stood guard with their silenced weapons, while JB found a vehicle in decent shape and put it into neutral. He steered while the rest pushed the wag toward the wall, its flat tires crunching over the loose gravel. Coming abreast to the wall, JB parked the wag and set the brake. Weapons at the ready, the companions walked for a minute, listening for any reactions or alarms, but all was still. Going to the rear of the wag, Christy tied a rope to the main axle, loosely coiling the rest of the length over his shoulder. The strong cotton rope had been machine washed in hot water with dark clothing of different colors found in the redoubt, and came out a murky camo pattern that was barely visible. One by one, they climbed up the wag and onto the top of the wide stone blocks. Christy was the last, trailing the rope behind her as she joined the others, and they stood gazing upon the Ville of the Blues. There seemed to be some damage to a few of the buildings, and each attributed it to possible Mutie attacks. The rad-blasted animals of Tennessee were the wild-card factor in the whole operation. If there was an attack by Screamwings or Stickies while the companions were planting the charges, the chances of their getting out were slimmer than a baron keeping a solemn promise. Crouching, the companions waited on the wall, while Ryan headed to the left, Jack to the right. The masked teenager traveled only 100 yards before a figure appeared on the wall before him. Without pause, Jack fired the crossbow, the bolt taking the man in the throat. Dropping his blaster, the sick man staggered and almost fell inside the Ville, but the albino teenager rushed forward, grabbed the man by the shirt, and shoved him over the wall. The body landed with a crunch, and Jack moved on. Reaching the gap in the wall, the teenager headed back along the top until rejoining the others. A few seconds later, Ryan returned, sliding a fresh clip into his empty Sig Sauer. Suddenly, the searchlight was coming their way. The companions hurried to the exterior edge of the blocks and lowered themselves over the side, holding on by their hands. The brilliant beam swept over that section of the wall and moved onward without even pausing. The companions pulled themselves up and moved to the inside edge. Christy now uncoiled the colored rope and lowered the knotted length to the ground below. Ryan went first to anchor the rope with his weight, and the rest followed. They reached the scorched earth and spread out so as not to offer a group target to any unseen enemy. Overton had been a sharp military commander, but they didn't know if Sheffield was any good. Underestimating an opponent was a fast way to taking the forever sleep. Fools thought they were invincible and died. A true warrior feared death and so lived to fight another day. Stabbing a wooden stake into the ground, Ryan tied off the rope to keep it still, then took a handful of dirt and rubbed some of it between his fingers. The soil was badly burned. Even the roots of the grass were charred dead. Sheffield had to have used the kite on his own base. If he could do that... For a moment, Ryan weighed calling off the assault, then decided they would never have another chance to finish the job. In every fight, every battle, an opportunity would come for a telling strike that would end the matter. If the chance was missed, the odds might turn against you. Ryan touched the long scar on his face and frowned, then raised an open hand, closing it into a fist to summon the others. Passing out the plast charges, JB whispered brief instructions on how to set the timing pencils embedded into the huge wads of sticky C4. Accepting the charge, Jack gave Mildred the crossbow and drew one of his many knives, the steel blade blackened with soot from a candle flame. Then Jack moved off into the darkness and was gone from sight. The young hunter worked best alone on a night creep, and they all knew it. Christy and Doc were assigned the dish. She took the charge, and they headed around the silent slave quarters to swing behind the blockhouse underneath the antenna. Holding the crossbow and a Kalashnikov, Mildred stayed with the rope to act as anchor for the group, while JB and Ryan moved stealthily through the night towards the noisy power plant full of sec men. In the cool quiet of his private bedroom, Baron Sheffield sat in a comfortable chair and sipped a glass of whiskey. The amber-colored liquid swirled over the miracle of ice cubes from his small electric fridge in the corner. It had been a long day, and the next one would be even longer. But success was spread before them like a path through the woods. Where Silas had so sadly failed, there was no way Sheffield could do anything but succeed. The table before him was stacked with maps of Virginia, both pre-dark and modern. The civilians and secmen of Green Coville were probably still chilling one another, finding an easy release from their blindness. Melt of Ville, what crap! Where was the profit in that? Corpses made poor slaves. But blind men could still be chained to a plow, or a water wheel. Sheffield took another sip of the whiskey, marveling over its smoothness and savoring the rich flavor on his tongue. The ancient stuff tasted nothing like homemade shine. The next day, his small army of blue shirts would leave this rad-blasted hellhole and seize their new home at Green Cove. He would immediately send out a scout to talk peace with Nathan Cotter of